Welcome to the Your Gateway to Wealth and Fulfillment podcast. I'm Andrew Kittleson, joined by my team member, Gordon Semenuk. We are financial advisors with Gateway Wealth Management at UBS. Located in Charlotte, North Carolina, we can be reached at 704-362-8260. We are joined today by Grant Leonard, head coach of Queen's University basketball, men's basketball. His views are his own. He's not affiliated with UBS in any way. Grant, thanks for joining us today. Gordon and I are very excited. We're big basketball fans ourselves. Still like to play a few times a week. Yeah, we're looking forward to chopping it up, talking some hoops. To kind of kick us off, tell us how you got into coaching. When did you know you wanted to be a basketball coach?
Yeah, I think with probably most people as they transition from college, there's always I'm not sure, right? I thought I wanted to go into coaching, and I actually went into academia, and I was a teaching assistant and a research assistant for Wisconsin Milwaukee. And I asked Coach Pearl at the time if I could volunteer, and he said no. But I had a lot of different directions I could go, but he recommended that I volunteer at the local high school down the road. And so I went down the road to Shorewood High School in Wisconsin, found their boys' varsity coach, and asked if I could volunteer. And he was like, yeah, free help, no problem. We talked a few times before that first practice, but then after that first practice, I kind of knew that's what I wanted to do the rest of my life. But before that, like when you're in college, like I changed majors multiple times. I started off pre-law, moved to biology, and then ended up with psychology. And I really wasn't sure what I wanted to do because I was playing basketball. But 21 years later, here we are.
Well, the psychology background has to help. and coaching and dealing with everything you must deal with as a head coach.
There's definitely lessons to be learned from some of those studies that we did. But more importantly, you get in what you put in just in about anything, any walk of life. And so the more experience I get, and the more times I get to work with kids, and the more lessons I learn, the better, hopefully the more tools I have in my tool belt. But yeah, the psychology background doesn't hurt. The experience of failure and losing, I think, is way more valuable. And you learn more about what not to do after you do it wrong. And you pick yourself up and dust yourself off, and you do it again and hopefully get it right the next time.
That applies to a lot more things than basketball, by the way.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about your journey then from Wisconsin, volunteering coach to Queens. I know we know you were an assistant before the head coach, but how'd you get from there to here?
Yeah, I call this the pickup truck story. I bought a pickup truck when I was a player in college. Took it to Wisconsin after I graduated from William Penn in Iowa, and threw everything I could in the back of that truck, and ended up coaching at Shorewood High School. And then at the end of that year, I decided I want to try and get into college. And so I took a job at a Division III school for $3,000 a year. I mean, you do the math on that. It's not very much, right? I can't even pay your rent. But I threw all my stuff in the back of a pickup truck again and drove it to Maryland, and was on the Eastern Shore of Maryland, and worked there for a year under unbelievable coach Rob Nugent, and an unbelievable man. And from there, I was doing a lot of volunteering at different camps and stuff to try and network and meet people and also recruit more for free, so I didn't have to pay. And then ended up being fortunate in getting a pay cut to go coach at Texas Pan American, which is now Texas Rio Grande Valley, which is on the border of Mexico and Texas near the Gulf of Mexico. So I again threw my stuff in a pickup truck and drove there. It was a Division I school, and I volunteered for 3 years. And while I was there volunteering, I ran the residence halls, but I had to apply for that job separate and had to do that. We had a really good run and ended up being let go at the end of year three. So had a decision to make, like, hey, do I want to go home back to Wisconsin? And I was like, no, I didn't want to do it. So I took a ride on I-10 and drove to Florida, ended up in Jacksonville, and was serving tables and working kids out and some pros out, and then ended up getting a job as a Division II assistant at Flagler College in St. Augustine, and was there a year, and then ended up moving to Payne College in Augusta, Georgia. And the pickup truck is still there. Each time, you know, you leave what you don't need and you take what you do need. You figure out what your living situation is going to be, and you keep coaching. And Payne, 7 years into the coaching journey, was the first time I had a full-time salary with benefits to coach. and I didn't have to do anything else. And that was a really unbelievable experience. That was my last job before Queens. I had two really good years at Payne College under Jimmy Link, and then Coach Lundy hired me at Queens, and I was the assistant for 9 years or associate head coach, and then now was very fortunate to be the, I guess, dubious honor of only coach in college history to go from Division II assistant to Division I head coach in the same year. We transitioned from Division II to Division I, and I transitioned from associate head coach to head coach. And so it was a very unique transition and a lot of lessons learned. But that pickup truck made it all the way through Augusta before I got a new car because I couldn't afford one. But what I did learn was how bad I really wanted it. And that's really what catapulted me where I am now.
People always say you want to do what you love. And yeah, it sounds like that's exactly what you did. And it's really a great story. You know, the passion, following your passion, not getting paid very much, but sticking with it and being where you are today. So, I mean, that is it's inspirational, really. It's a great lesson.
Yeah. Served a lot of tables from breakfast at the Hilton to O.C. White Seafood on St. Augustine Beach to steakhouses, and have done a bunch of other jobs like run residence halls and done game management, setting up games and opened up the weight room, you know, and was there for the early morning, like, you know, first couple hours, cleaned floors, you know, where they paid me $15 every time I cleaned the floor at school. If you really are trying to do it, there's no task that matters. I'm just trying to make ends meet. And to me, it just taught me like that's, if I really want to do this, then I got to be willing to do that.
And that's a tremendous amount of perseverance. And that obviously, I know you well, that's part of your character, and that's got to translate, I would imagine, in the kids that you're coaching today, or young men.
You take lessons from everyone, right? So my dad was probably the biggest influence in my life, and my dad was a company man. And I don't know that the company man exists anymore, where you graduate college and you work for one company the rest of your life, and you get a pension, and you work your way up the corporate ladder in that company, right? And so I never saw my dad take a sick day. And I'm not saying he never got sick, but I never saw it, right? He woke up and he showed up before office hours, you know, because he said he got more work done in those hour and a half, 2 hours before everyone got in. And he came home when the work was done, not when the work hours were done. And he, you know, did the company picnics and everything that you did. And so I think I take that, a lot of those lessons learned, and I apply it to Queens. Like, we work like that. And I think our team embodies that. We work every day, and our goal is to get better every day. And I appreciate that my dad instilled that in me. And I think that the players in our program hopefully take some of the perseverance I had, where it's not about getting everything all at once. I always, like, you know, an analogy I use, you give someone a huge plate of food, right? You got this big steak or whatever it is your favorite food is, and you can't eat it in one bite. You got to take one bite at a time. You got to get better a little bit at a day. And if you give enough runway, you'll get everything you want out of your journey. But if you think you're going to get it all at once, that's truly rare. It's like hitting the lottery. It's just not feasible.
Let me ask you, all right, let's get a little bit more into the basket.
Yeah, yeah.
And I always find when talking to especially college coaches that I can go online, look at your record, everyone's been to the games, we see that you went to the NCAAs this year, all that stuff is factual and on record. What I think is really interesting are recruiting stories, because those can be really good. They don't make the newspapers or the websites or anything like that, and most coaches can tell some pretty good tales. The first question I have, if you look at your roster, your players come from everywhere. They show up on the court. They introduce the starting lineups. You can look at the program, see where they're from. But how did they get there? Where do you start? What are the methods you use to find players, recruit them? And I know things have changed, so I'm talking now. I guess let's talk about the present system. But what's the process with that? How do they end up from where they are to Queens?
Yeah, and I think every coach is a little different in their style. I'm definitely a relationship recruiter. People entrust their kids with me, and they have to trust that we have a vision for them and we have a plan for what their career is going to look like. And sometimes we're just a stop on that journey now, a little more often now with the portal and how things work, but that's okay. But we still have to have a plan for them. We got to be able to execute that. And there's a lot of different layers to actually getting a player. Like, there's the evaluation period. Like, can you actually watch a player and figure out who's going to be good for you versus who everyone thinks is good. And there's so much misinformation out there, all these ranking systems and everything. And there's not that they're wrong or right, but it's just like that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be effective for you. So can you evaluate the players? Can you see where it's going? Can you see where they're going in your culture and organization? And then there's like, do you have the relationships, the plan to get them to where they believe in you and think this is the next step? So there's two steps to that. There's the evaluation piece, and then there's the actually closing of that deal. And now there's NIL involved with the close of that deal, but that's another layer. You know, do you have the funds to be able to accomplish that? So there's so many fun stories. And I think probably the most unique one for me, because it was such a huge learning experience, like really early in my career, I was at a camp in New Jersey, and I was at a Division I school and saw this kid. I loved him. Absolutely was like, okay. And I'll tell you his name at the end. I kind of build a relationship with this kid, and I bring it back to my boss in Texas. And I'm like, hey, coach, like I got this kid. I really want to sign him. He's like, okay, Grant, tell me about the kid, you know? And he's like, how big is he? I was like, he's 6'8". He's like, awesome. He's like, well, what's his body like? He's a little thin. But I said, you can tell his shoulders are big. Like, he'll put some weight on. But he's like, okay. He's like, how's he shoot it? I was like, coach, he can't shoot it at all. He's like, okay. How's his post moves? Post moves aren't that great. He's like, Grant, we can get better players than that. Like, come on now. He's like, that kid's not going to be good enough. You know, we can go get a player in junior college that's more ready. And I was like, coach, I think he's just really good, like his motor, everything. But I couldn't convince my coach. I didn't have enough enthusiasm or ability to say what. And that ended up being Kenneth Faried, who ended up being a multi-time NBA All-Star and on the Olympic team. And so obviously I regret that. I wish, and there's been multiple times since then that I've been able to walk into my boss's office with the conviction to say, close the door, we're taking this kid. He's going to help us win a lot of games, regardless of the flaws. So I learned a lot from that one. But Kenneth ended up having a great career at Morehead State, ended up being All-American. They beat Louisville in the tournament and has gone on to a great pro career. And what could have been, right? What could have been?
Isn't his nickname Manimal or something like that?
Manimal, yes.
Manimal. I mean, that tells you all.
You could see that at the time, I guess.
Yeah, you could. But if only I see it and I can't relay that to the person who's making the decision, right? And so I always try and tell guys, if you're going to walk in, and again, my old boss then, and this isn't right or wrong, he would tell me, you know, gun to your head, this is the first kid you're going to ever sign at this level. It could make or break your career. You take him. That's a lot of pressure. I don't put that type of pressure on our guys. I tell them this, like, have conviction. Tell me why you think he'll be successful here and what part of his game and our organization is going to get him on the floor and what part is going to catapult him to hopefully being an all-conference player. So I ask those questions. And if you don't have those answers, it's probably not going to go that direction. When I was young, I just wasn't able to communicate that.
So what's the difference, or how does it work then if you're the assistant and you're going out and recruiting, now you're the head coach? When do you get involved? What's the process? How does it work?
Yeah, and each organization is different. So I'm probably in the head coaching area of where Roy Williams was or where Will Wade is, where I'm still heavily, heavily involved in the evaluation process and the signing process. So not every head coach has the same dynamic, okay? But I'm still probably the primary recruiter. And I say that as a person who runs an organization, right? Like, I'm like the CEO of Queens Basketball. You have to do what gives you energy. And I still love the thrill of the hunt in recruiting. And recruiting gives me a ton of energy. So I've kept that as part of something that I still do a lot, even though your role as a head coach could be different. You could go in different directions. I'm still there for a lot of the evaluations. I have one assistant who I heavily trust, Dan Bailey, who I trust his evaluation, but I still want to see every player live before we sign them. But it's different. The portal's different too. Like, you used to recruit a kid for a year, sometimes 2 years to a year before you'd sign them, and they're in high school and you get to watch them develop. Now we're signing kids and it's like speed dating. You know, they go in the portal and you have about 3 to 4 weeks and you get 3 or 4 kids on a visit in a row. So you drop one off at the airport and you literally pick the next one up, and then you drop him off, you pick the next one up, and it's like a never-ending cycle for 3 weeks. The vetting process and how you evaluate with film and numbers and analytics happens so much faster. It's like drinking from a fire hose. So it's really unique how fast the dynamic has changed and how you have to change your organization with it. It's almost like getting an airplane. It's in the air flying and we're still constructing the thing. So it's really unique. And I think we've stayed on the cutting edge, but I think it's still changing today.
How do you see things shaking out with all this, not just for you, but for everyone in terms of, I mean, there's even been proposed legislation on this. I mean, how do you envision this whole thing ending up?
I think there's multiple ways it could go. And I obviously, if Congress grants oversight and then collective bargaining gets included, it'll kind of slow down a little bit. I don't know how legal it is. I think that's the issue right now is everyone's like, well, why doesn't the NCAA just stop this? Well, they're just getting sued so much that they can't afford to keep taking lawsuits. So they've just kind of taken a step back, which has sped this whole machine up. And so I think the biggest thing you have to do is kind of be light on your feet, willing to twist and adjust and move with it as it goes. First of all, I've said this since the very beginning, Queens and Grant Leonard are very student forward people. I'm all for the students having the rights. Should they be able to make money? Yes. Should they be able to transfer? Yes. Does that mean that they all need to do it? No, that's different. The rights to do something and the needs to do it are very different. But for me, it's like, hey, yes, we might make a mistake with a kid transferring too many times and messing up, but that shouldn't mean we should restrict all the kids from transferring. And I think that's where the issues are is the model that we used to know wasn't legal, just wasn't. And we can't suddenly go back to that way, and people want to, but that's not going to happen. So we're not going to go backwards. I know that there could end up at some point being some collective bargaining, but there's going to be a lot of layers before that happens.
Well, you're clearly exceptional at recruiting and coaching, developing these young men. It's mind-blowing, really, to think that Queens was a Division II school just a handful of years ago. And I think it was in 4 short years, you went from Division II, or no, 4 years as a Division I school to get into the NCAA tournament. We'll talk about the tournament and that experience here in a few minutes, but before that, what do you have to do to go from D2 to D1? What's that transition like?
To use another analogy, it's not like a light switch. You don't just flip it and you have everything, right? So it's more like a dimmer. And every year, I make sure that as the CEO of Queens Basketball, that I don't become that person who goes in to the athletic director's office or the president's office always complaining about what we don't have. I tactically choose 1 or 2 times a year to ask for 1 or 2 things, knowing I'm not going to get all of it, but then hopefully stack that year on year so that we look 4 years later and we're a heck of a lot closer.
We do that at UBS too, by the way.
Yeah, I think most good organizations should, right? Like you can't go demand and expect the world and have it all shift at once. It's not how it works. And again, I wanted to be a partner, a collaborator with our administration. I always wanted to make them feel like I was with their team. All right, we made this move together. We went Division I as a school, not as a basketball team. And we did it to raise the eyeballs at Queens. And so how do I become a partner in that with basketball as the lens? And thought I did that and thought we all did it together. And you look back 4 years later and you're like, hey, not only are we the third team ever in college basketball history to transition and go to the tournament in their first year eligible, we're the smallest school ever to go to the tournament. So that's unique. And now that it's only a 3-year wait, we're the fastest team that ever did it. So like that's such a unique thing that Queens accomplished as a community. And it's not just a basketball team, the entire community did it. And I think that's the biggest mission is we want to build community through basketball. And what I saw when we got back from the tournament, that the skyline was turned Queens blue that night of our game, and that most of the restaurants and sports bars in South Charlotte were sold out. That's awesome to hear. And now the profile of the school, even in just our community, has changed. And how many people are like, go Queens everywhere I go. It's awesome to see. And it's come quite a way.
It sure has. It's amazing. And I was there, I think it was Selection Sunday, in the arena that night. And the excitement was just unbelievable. And everybody was so engaged. And when they announced you as the head coach, I mean, you got the biggest sort of standing ovation. Yeah. And I know it's more than just you. You're the leader of the program and you collaborate with everyone. And obviously the kids have so much to do with it. But I mean, it's really special what you've done to get into the tournament in just a few short years. What has that done to the program? Obviously, it's elevated you.
Yeah,
it's got to be helpful for recruiting. Probably puts even more pressure on you. Expectations. What's it like kind of post-tournament appearance?
Yeah. I mean, talk about the pressure first. That's a great thing, right? But I think at any good organization, the people who lead it put more pressure on themselves than anyone ever could externally. So you have more internal pressure. And hopefully, like, our expectation was to go to the tournament. That doesn't mean that, like, the season was a failure if we didn't go, but like that was the goal. That was the expectation. Like we thought we had built the team that it was ready to do that. And then we accomplished it. But now, yes, we call recruits now and they, Queens, you guys went to the tournament. Like they, it's not, hey, is Queens in New York City, which we got a lot for a long period of time. And so really cool now that people are like, hey, Queens is, they went to the tournament. Queens is in the A-Sun. Hey, Queens is picked to win their league last year. And so there's all these different layers. People know more. But the whole point of it is so that we can educate more people about how great of a place Queens is and how great the community is and how great the student experience is and why the culture of the entire school, not just the basketball program, is an awesome place to be. And that's the point of all of this. And so that's what going to the tournament's done, as I think it's raised the entire profile of the school. And I think it's going to continue to do that. And basketball is just one portion of it.
So we expect to be back in the tournament again. Sounds like.
It's not a guarantee, is it?
No, there is definitely not a guarantee. I'll tell you this, though. My job, though, is to make us be in the fight every year. And that should be the goal is, you know, because everyone asks when you have success, just like with kids, you know, hey, they had a great year. They're going to go in the portal, right? Well, not every kid does that. And my goal is to build Queens into a sustainable power to where we're constantly in the fight to be A-Sun champions. You know, obviously people in the Charlotte area really know this name, but like what Coach McKillop did at Davidson, and he could have left, but he built a legacy at Davidson. And so my goal is to do that. You know, if life-changing opportunity comes, that's awesome. But I want to build Queens into something that the community can rally around, like Coach McKillop did at Davidson, like John Becker's done at Vermont, where they're constantly winning. And for me, that means next year we should compete to win again. And we've brought back, we're the only mid-major team in the entire tournament that brought back multiple double-digit scores. And I think that's a testament to the entire Queens community and the experience they got. And so I do think we'll be in the fight again. If we do our job right and develop the kids, we should be able to be in that championship and fight for it again.
Shifting and talking about the kids, I mean, so you've been doing this for a long time. Any idea how many like kids, young men, lives you've touched? I mean, we talk about the basketball component, but instilling your perseverance, and I'm sure you've got plenty of kids who arrive on campus with their own stories in their perseverance. Any idea how many lives you've touched at this point? Do you ever think about that?
You know, no one's ever asked me that in totality. So, you know, people ask like, hey, how many pros have you coached? And, you know, just at Queens in 13 years, it's been 40 guys, but we've had way more players than that. And, you know, you're bringing up Tate Small earlier, and I'd like to think, I don't even like to think, Tate has told me. And, you know, Tate was a player on some of our best teams when we were Division II. But Tate's like, he learned more lessons from our basketball program and how to work and how we approach failure and handle adversity and how we communicate to each other when things are hard than he ever did in the classes he did at Queens. Those type of comments mean more to me as a coach than anything. When guys come back and they're like, coach, like, everything you taught me, like that's the foundation for like my family values. Those are the moments where you're like, God, I think we might have done that one right.
If you would, take a minute just to sell us on Queens, almost as if you're talking to us as recruits or how you might talk to someone you want to go there. Obviously, you know, being here in Charlotte's something to it, but just give us some of the bullet points on that, if you would.
Yeah. I always tell people this too, like, Queens is a very unique experience. It's not for everyone, though. You know, you can go to a big state school and you'll walk in, your first class be 500 to 1,000 people. Well, that's never going to happen at Queens. You know, you're going to walk into class and there's going to be 20 students. There's no teaching assistants. The professor is going to teach you and you're going to have access to that professor, but you're going to be graded on your collaboration within that class, your discussion within that class, how you do group work, how you speak in front of the group. It's not just going to be lecture test. The education is holistic. The school motto is not to be served, but to serve. And service is an aspect of every part of every class. And it's a part of our basketball program too. So when you come to Queens, you know that building community is something we really care about, going into the community and doing work and learning to serve others. And so after you're here for a few years and you walk around Myers Park and you don't have your ear pods in and you don't have your hood on and you learn to dress and present in class because you know you have to talk and communicate with others and collaborate, then all of a sudden, 3 or 4 years later, you're communicating at a very different level, both written and orally and body language. And so when you walk into that first interview and you can talk about the community service you've done, you can talk about the internships that you were required to have at Queens, because Queens can do that because they only have a few thousand students instead of 50 or 60,000. Your experience is very unique and it's very student forward. And everyone can't walk that rope or that line, but the Queens students that do, they have an unbelievable experience. And you're located in the city with access to internships and companies that most college towns will never afford you the access to. And so all of those things combined give you this really rich experience that Queens does. And I've seen it change kids' lives. Hopefully I did a good job there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm sold. I'm sold now.
Where do we sign? Yeah. Obviously, I've been in this city for almost nearly 30 years. We're sitting up here in our office looking down towards Queens, and one of Charlotte's nicknames is the City of Trees. And for anybody who's not been to that campus, it's in the middle of Myers Park, almost underneath a forest. I mean, it's absolutely gorgeous. It's a great location. I think this is a wonderful experience for...
Maybe he should hire you as a recruiting coordinator. That sounded really good, Andrew.
That's it. Plug me in, coach. I'm ready to play.
I've seen Queens do amazing things for kids. Like I said, the school goal is to give kids a transformational experience, but I've been here 13 years and it's given me one too. And it's changed my life and it's changed what I look at as my goal in life, is to just serve others. And Queens has given me that, and I appreciate them for that.
I know they appreciate you, or they sure should. I guess one last question that I have, what's maybe the one thing, you know, if you had a magic wand that you need to, let's say, take this to the next level, to go from a 16 seed where you guys actually were in the game and competed at a high level for a good part of that first half before things started to really open up, but hugely successful season. Yeah, what would be the one thing, if you could have anything, that would help you get to the next level?
It's resources. And again, the transition, when you're Division II to Division I, you don't have them all right away, and we're getting there. Again, it's like a knob, like a dimmer, right? So we're getting more and more every year. But, you know, you look at those big schools, and when you play them, my entire roster is compensated on the level of their 10th man. And that's just the reality of it. So the teams, the mid-major teams you see having success in the tournament, you know, last year High Point, the year before McNeese State. We are 2-0 against High Point since we've been Division I, by the way. So shout out to that.
And nice.
Don't let them tell you they'll play anyone anywhere, because that's not true, because they stopped playing us when we went 2-0. But that's another thing. But those teams are so financially invested, High Point and McNeese, and you can see the resources, and that's why they're able to win a game or two in the tournament. And we're getting there. But people who want to be a part of our journey, we would love to have them. I always say it's got to be a win-win. If you're going to invest in something like this, it can't be transactional. It's got to be something where you feel like you're a part of our family and our organization, and you can see where it's going, and you can see the quality and character of the people that are in our organization from top down, and our players to our coaches to our administration to everyone. If people want to be a part of that, it's money well spent, but that's really what it is resources.
how do they get in touch with you? I'm sure your email is on your website, probably.
It's not.
Okay.
It's not. But there's so many different ways in social media. And my, I'll give my email for this podcast. It's Leonard, L-E-O-N-A-R-D-G at queens.edu. But, you know, email is so impersonal. Most people know me. They call me. I've been here a long time. And so text, call, direct message on social media, QU Coach Grant on almost all social media forums. But reach out and find a way that you can be involved. Don't just sit. I'm not just asking for a check. That's not how we do things.
We appreciate the excitement you've brought to the city and wish you all the success going forward. Keep it up. And thanks so much for coming in. It's been a pleasure talking to you today.
Thanks very much, Grant. Enjoyed this.
Yeah. Thank you for having me and go Royals, but thank you for everything.
Yeah, man.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.
This podcast was edited by Resonate Recordings.